On this week's episode of the I-501CU, the podcast for nonprofit board members, I'm interviewing Carrie Diaz. Carrie's actually an attorney, didn't practice, as you will hear, at least for very long. Had spent some time working behind the scenes of the Florida Capitol and then got into the nonprofit space and has since then really transformed the East Coast of Florida and is a highly respected consultant. So join me now as I interview Carrie Diaz. Hey, I want to jump in real quick. Somebody asked me the other day, what does the Corley Company do? Well, we do three things for nonprofits. One, we facilitate meetings. Yes, like board retreats where we discuss governance and strategy with all the members of the board. Number two, advise CEOs and help them as they make decisions and implement actions to drive their mission. And then finally, we produce podcasts such as this one, but also for a number of nonprofits to help you get the word out, get your message out. So if you're interested in any of these services, please feel free to reach out to Michael at thecorleycompany.com. Now back to the podcast. On this week's episode of I-501CU, the podcast for nonprofit board members, I'm going to interview Carrie Diaz. Carrie and I actually met probably a little over 10 years ago when she was CEO of a Quantum Foundation, and then she kind of moved on, took a different path in her career, and then came back as CEO of The Lord's Place. But I'm going to pause here, and Carrie, please introduce yourself and tell the audience a little bit about you and your background and how you got to be involved in the nonprofit space.
Well, how much time do you have? So like many people in the nonprofit world, I kind of came at it sideways. And I think there's a little bit of serendipity involved when most people get involved in nonprofits. So I'm actually trained as a lawyer, licensed to practice in three states, practiced for about a hot minute, decided that really wasn't for me. And as luck would have it, I had run into a friend of a friend who was working on a congressional campaign that had a lot of policies I was interested in. So I went right from there to working on a congressional campaign, got me involved in that. I then worked in the Florida legislature. So I was kind of on the other side of making the sausage on the inside. How do I develop policies from the front end? And then from there, I went to work for a nonprofit that represented home care and hospice providers. So I was in the advocacy world out in California. Now, this allowed me to see kind of both sides of the table, how the policies were made, how to influence them, but also both sides of committees and boards, because I was serving on some committees and boards there, but I was also staffing them. So that was my first entry into how does this dynamic work? I know most of your listeners are board members, so I have seen both sides of that coin. From there, I came back to Florida and I ran a small nonprofit, which was funded by the Quantum Foundation. That introduced me to them. I then left that project. They asked me to be on their grants committee, then chair their grants committee, then be on their board. And then they had a vacancy and they asked me to throw my hat in the ring, and there you go. So I was there for 3 years. Which was great. It was a transition time. And I know we'll talk later about some transition items, but I'm one of those weird creatures that loves transitions. I embrace change, which is a little freaky, but it works for me. So after that, I went and opened a business for 6 years. So little small business. So I think that helped also. I know your background is in business, and we've discussed that nonprofits can't be run like business, but having some acumen around financial statements, accountability, policies and procedures that are really tight, that stand up to legal scrutiny, et cetera, I think that's a good background. And then went over to Costa Rica for a year with my kids. Totally different. But what it did is it said, hey, look at all the people in need. Are you really supposed to be running a business, or do you need to get back to nonprofit? So in addition to it being a wonderful experience for my kids and our family, it also said, Carrie, you need to go back to nonprofit. So when I came back, started consulting, right out of the gate, I had a 3-month engagement with the Lord's Place, which turned into 2 years and 3 months. And perhaps because they loved me, but probably more because of what they were going through at the time. So major construction projects, multiple major construction projects, as well as the CEO had a health crisis and was undergoing cancer treatment. So it was not something I could leave. And I've had a respect and passion for that organization for a very, very long time, dating back to my Quantum days. So I said, I'm in. The construction is done. She's healthy. Now it's time for me to leave. And I still have a very good relationship with them. So once that first consulting job back in the gate was over, I've taken a little time, and then I've put myself out there again and have been discussing some consulting gigs and are working on some succession planning with organizations. So that brings you up to today. Very windy road. Thank you for being in there.
Well, it sure is. And what a background you've had. And I was fascinated, of course, when I read your bio, when you and I spoke beforehand about you being an attorney, and said, no, not quite, not going to pray. But it really gave you some insight and some perspective on things. So how did that law school background help you throughout your career, and particularly when you were CEO of the foundation?
Well, I think it's always good to have a lawyer that knows how to read a contract in your hip pocket, especially for nonprofits that typically can't afford a full-time in-house counsel. And not that I ever acted in the capacity of in-house counsel, but I certainly knew enough to flag it and then get it to an expert attorney in that area. I think it also makes you approach things in an analytical way. I am truly all heart, but I know when I need to put the hat on of, you really need to poke holes in this. You really need to find the ways that this can go sideways so that the nonprofit is better informed. And then whatever solution to that there is to that, the CEO and others can make that, but at least you've pointed out what the possible pitfalls are of a move or a document or an arrangement that's going to be put forth.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, before you became CEO of Quantum, you were on the board. Do you think serving on the board helped you be a better CEO? And then also, I'd welcome you to talk a little bit about the two roles and the dynamics there, because I find this fascinating.
So I was actually on the board, became CEO, and stayed on the board. Left being CEO, stayed on the board a very brief time. I think it is very difficult to go board, CEO, CEO, board, either way you look at it. It can be a treacherous path. I think the reason it worked for me is because before I was on the board, I ran a nonprofit. I had experience. So I had a deep understanding of how that really worked. There were, you know, no disillusion about how that really worked. Now, I stayed on the board really just for a transition period. I think you need to get out of the way of the new CEO, 100%. But I also wanted the rest of the board to have a period of time to feel comfortable with that transition. After a couple months, it was time for me to go. I think as a former executive at a nonprofit, it is very hard to go in and serve on the board because you know how the sausage is made, to use my legislative example again. There is, as you know, a very clear line between what the board does and what the staff does. And staff is operational, board is strategic and fiscally responsible. Once you know the depth of the operations, it is very hard to sit on a board and hold back because you do have knowledge, you do have thoughts that can be very insightful, but it can be very disruptive to the way the board works as an organism.
Boy, that's very interesting. That makes a lot of sense. So then you go start a business and you come back and now you've got this 3-month engagement that turns into longer than that. So let's dissect the latter half of that a little bit. So you come back. Are you a better consultant because you had served on the board, because you had been a CEO of a foundation?
I think so. I would argue because I've seen both sides of it. And I know how that board member feels when there's a presentation going on. I know how that staff member feels when they're giving a presentation. And although I've had a variety of careers, I think the hallmark or the tie that binds all of them is I go into a situation always looking for everyone to walk out of that conversation, that situation, feeling like they got what they needed, right? So that helps going in as a board member, understanding where the staff is coming from. And it helps going in as a staff member because I know what the board's looking for. So I would argue that it certainly does.
So you come in as COO, a three-month gig, and you stayed longer. And so let's talk a little bit about succession planning, because something happened and you needed to stay. So as you take a step back and you think about just succession planning at the board level and at the CEO level, can you talk about your observations, maybe what you would say are some now best practices that organizations should adhere to?
Absolutely. And I want to give a caveat here. This is all from learned experience. So in the moment, I may not have been acting this way 100% of the time. But I would say that succession planning, which I may have already told you I hate that word, it really is, you know, how do you position the organization for success? How do you make the organization not dependent on or defined by one individual? So we discussed about the word intentional. From day one of sitting in that seat as CEO, how are you preparing for the possibility you may be out for a day, a week, a month, or that your term ends due to some catastrophic event? So I think you plan from that from day one. So you are bringing your staff along, giving them opportunities to rise in leadership, rise in visibility in the community. And you get the opportunity as CEO to step back and say, what are those things like only I can do? I mean, have you met a nonprofit CEO who thinks they have spare time? They're overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed. And I think part of it is that they were entrusted with carrying this organization through on the journey, being successful. The board is relying on them to do that. However, I think then some of that responsibility might get tied up with fear or ego of letting go a little bit, of sharing the responsibility appropriately, when appropriate. And if you go in with the mindset that from day one, something may happen, and not out of fear, but what's the opportunity? What are the moments of opportunity for other staff? So if something does happen, that organization will be ready, and I free myself up to do the things I am uniquely qualified to do.
This is wonderful. I'm actually just taking notes. That was the reason for the pause. And so going in with the mindset right off the bat to position the organization for success beyond you, really tough to do. Do you talk to other people about it? Do you let staff know about any succession planning that's in place? Do you keep that close to the vest, work with the board? What was your approach, or what would you recommend?
So I think there's two different kinds of succession planning. There is the document that everyone has that's out of date, that, you know, like the strategic plan, that's hard to revisit. But I think it becomes a living document, right? So you hire the CEO. In their deliverables, there is intentional succession planning for the C-suite in the organization is in the deliverables. It is on a quarterly check-in on the board list. So that's the conversation between the CEO and the board, right? Is do you have the pieces and puzzles in place? Now, I would argue at this point, the board does not need to know it is John Smith or Susie Hugh who is slated to expand in advocacy or in community development. I don't think they need to know that because, again, this is an operational issue, right? But I think they need to know that the CEO is intentionally working on it. Now, the CEO, I believe, needs to identify those members of her team that she can bring along, he or she can bring along, and really mentor for them from day one. And by mentor, I don't mean develop a plan that says, have you done this? Have you done that? I mean, let them get inside your head, right? Like, not what did I do? Why did I do it? Because then that gives them the skill when they're faced with an instance, a circumstance, something they need to make a decision about. It won't look exactly like the one that you presented to them, right? But they'll know how you attacked it. So they can take that skill set and apply it to whatever comes up for them. Back to the document. I think if someone's named in a succession document, they better know. I think if something catastrophic happens and you get caught flat-footed, you may not want the added responsibility. Now here we have a written document that's binding on the board that names you. You may not have focused in your career, whatever leverage you had, to learn more about that area, knowing that you were next in line to handle whatever that task was. So it gives you a little impetus and ownership over developing your own skills around that issue, knowing that you're the backup plan.
Well stated. And so when you think about succession planning, let's just move up the chain, I guess the organizational chain a little bit, to the board level. You've seen it, you've lived it. What are some best practices for succession planning for the board chair? Well, really any officer in the board and even board members, but the board chair, and how far ahead do you look towards that? Just welcome your thoughts on that as board members are listening.
Yeah. I think you need to plan far in advance. And it doesn't have to, this next statement I'm going to say, it doesn't have to be public. I think the CEO has to have some things in their hip pocket, right? You know the skill set. You know if something happens, even if it's, you know, the vice chair is supposed to step in for the chair, but then something happens to both of them. You know who's strong. You know who can step in, right? And I think you have to give people opportunities. It may not be the person that speaks out the loudest. It may not be the finance committee chair, which for some reason is a very popular candidate for board chair. But, you know, it's fine to mix it up. And I think you get those interesting, strong people with different approaches by the way you recruit for the board. And in my experience, a lot of board recruiting is done by other board members, which is amazing, right? You get people, they're pre-vetted, people they know are going to show up and be involved. But a lot of times you just get more of the same. I think, why not open this process up? If you trust your second, third in command on a staff level, your C-suite, and you have a trusting relationship with them, why not ask their opinion? What about your other trusted partners that you can have a discreet conversation with in the community, right? You now have completely opened up your opportunity to build a bench. Even if it's not a bench you use today or tomorrow, 3 years from now, the accountant on your board leaves. You also have the only minority female leave. You go back to your list, you call back your contacts who are interested in helping you. You have now have a list put together that you control. Now, I'm not saying that the CEO or the board chair is going to let go of this control, but be open to input from others. But that, again, is my approach. I think that, you know, you have to be open. I used to say to my team all the time, do nothing alone, right? This is a community solution, a community nonprofit, responding to in partnership with the community. So what is it that you do every day that you can have that same mindset? Ultimately, the board and the CEO are responsible for whatever their organization does, right? But how do you bring others along? It's you don't have to shine the spotlight on just one person or on just one organization.
So this is fascinating. So chair succession starts way early in the process with the recruiting of board members.
Absolutely.
And as a CEO, you should always be, in quotes, recruiting board members or positioning it. And I love the fact what you share with me. And come to find out, we had a mutual friend. You've got a trusted friend over in West Palm Beach, whom I happen to know. And you said, you call her sometimes to vet people and just run the idea by her. And is she in the foundation in the world? No. But she's just connected. So you'll say, what do you think about so-and-so? So that helps you through or helped you through your vetting process.
Right. Absolutely.
And absolutely. So we all need that board of advisors, whether it's a real or a theoretical board of advisors, mm-hmm. to bounce ideas off of. So CEOs out there, you're always recruiting, looking for prospective and future board members. Yes, board members should do the same. But the reality is a CEO is probably going to outlive most board members, right? From a tenure perspective.
Right. Correct.
So when you take a step back and you've been in both those roles, CEO leadership, and then you've also been on the board, what are some traits that make people effective? Let's go to board first. What are traits that make effective board members?
I think attentive, inquisitive, curious, respectful.
That last word. And talk a little bit about that. Yeah.
So I think you need to, just the nuts and bolts. Read the materials. Do your own research. Be curious. Come ask questions. Listen to other people's answers and questions on the board. Digest that. And don't step over the line into operations. Know your place, which is immensely important. Again, if something bad happens with this nonprofit, that board is in the spotlight, right? So you do have a very, very, very important role and you do take it seriously, but you have to stop short of being concerned about operational issues, unless there's a crisis, unless there's malfeasance or something untoward is happening. But don't be afraid of being really curious and asking questions.
And how about traits for a CEO?
Well, I might be beating a drum here, but open, willing to share, and really focuses on building trusting relationships. I think that as CEOs, we're so busy with so much, especially of a smaller nonprofit. I mean, there's so much on your plate, right? I mean, the phone doesn't stop ringing. People need you to step back and really invest in relationships and building trust, because what that does is pay dividends down the road, much like starting with succession planning from day one builds dividends down the road. If you have that trusted relationship, there's almost nothing you can't do in an organization, you know, within constraints, but right, you can get so much more done when the people you work with and the people you partner with and your board trust what you're saying and what you're doing.
And so board members, this is interesting. So board members who come from the business world, right? They'll sit on a nonprofit board. Sometimes I've observed they have a tough time understanding this, the whole collaboration, the building trust. We have to go slower and broader. We can't just go straightforward with an idea like they can.
They get to make all the decisions, right? Yes. I would gather that there are a lot of entrepreneurs or CEOs on boards, right? They have control over their schedule. They have the ability to be flexible and attend, which is amazing. But you're right. They do usually make a decision and then it's implemented. There is no, let's see how this works with this. Oh, there's this governmental agency that's involved. Let's have a meeting. Let's make sure that we're working together. And, you know, we keep talking about not having enough time. Well, let's get the CEO to share some responsibilities and control, and let's get the CEO working closely with the board, which they already do, but putting this on the agenda. And I know it is not as easy as that. I don't mean to sound flippant, but really spending time with teaching them what it means to be a board member. Which is so uniquely different than being a board member of a for-profit corporation and or being the CEO or some other executive within a for-profit corporation.
So true. Well stated. And a lot of when I speak to boards, it's really on that topic. And the stay in your swim lane, don't get in the operations. And if I love entrepreneurs, but typically the entrepreneurs are the worst at that. They want to... and they're good at it. Fix a problem. Let's address it. Let's do it now. And they kind of get in the weeds sometimes.
But that person is also an interesting person on your board, because what you need to figure out is how do you give them a defined task, right? So I'm going to use an example that's close to home. So you have a hotel executive on your board. It's an entrepreneur, used to getting things done, wants to do stuff. Well, you're remodeling an apartment complex. You need furniture. Give them that job. Go source it. Get us a deal. Bring us used stuff from your whatever. We'd love for you to just do that. Consult if there's a specific concerns about the population, special needs, but just let them have that. There might be instances where you can tag board members that have that mindset and want to be helpful with specific things that don't have to do with operations or strategy, that are time and function limited. And, you know, they can then report right back to the CEO, and it's an opportunity to build a relationship with them that's a little bit closer and some trust. I trust you. You trust me.
Oh, I like that. And so as a CEO, And when you run the foundation, or and let me actually rise it up, best practices, how often should an executive director, CEO, communicate with individual board members? You know, we know we got the board meetings, but have you observed any best practices for ongoing outreach or regular outreach?
I think you need regular outreach. I did. I mean, I would meet with each one of the board members probably twice a year, lunch or something that is more open-ended, not a formal setting, so that they can share where they think we are without an audience. And more importantly, you can understand what are their needs. And we talked about this a little bit before, really understanding what your board needs. So if you're presenting a new project to this board and you want it to get approved, if you have spent that time, you know that Joe is really concerned about housing and Mary is really concerned about finances and also women's issues. So when you put this together, you can go in knowing what makes it a win for them. Not that you're going to be able to manipulate it into a win for them, but you can be conscientious about why they're there. They're there because these are their concerns. And that brought them to the board. So you want to honor those and just understand them. It helps you move through that process at the board level much easier because you understand where they're coming from and what their hot buttons are.
Yeah, very strategically managing your board. And we talk about this, managing the board, and it sounds so, prescriptive, but the reality is, look, every board member's got a different passion. Right. They want to serve, they want to help, and it's your job as the CEO to understand where to plug and play and to manage accordingly, because you're going to be the only one with the overall viewpoint of the organization, you know, from a programmatic perspective. Even the board chair won't have that perspective. So as we're starting to wind down a little bit, can you talk a little bit about the board chair CEO relationship and how that needs to be in place to be help the organization be effective?
I mean, we can't overstate it. It is critical. All the issues we talked about really start with the board members. So if we want that success versus succession training to start at the front end, you have to have your board chair bought into that. Anything that you're doing, really, you want to be in partnership with your board chair. So I would say that's obviously the most critical relationship with the CEO after staff. I would put it after staff.
That's a bold
statement.
They're
the ones that do the work. They're the ones that do the work every day. If you don't feed and water your staff, you have nothing to report. You have no success. You have nothing for the board to be proud of and for them to get involved in, et cetera. So that was a little segue, but I would say feed and water the staff first, then your board chair second. And then can I ask your opinion on something?
Well, absolutely. We're going to turn the table. She threatened to do this, everybody.
I did. So I have always had good relationships with my board, friendly relationships with my board, and some of them I knew previously, and we were friends. But I stopped short of really socializing or really being around the board, you know, calling them up like, let's play tennis, that kind of a thing, primarily because I don't play tennis, but that's my example. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I know not to ask you to play, or maybe I should ask you to play tennis. I don't play either. I'm old school in that regard. I think there's a separation when you become a leader. There's a separation you've got to be respectful of, and while socializing's fine, I think you've got to be careful not to breach that line. And it's just easier by arm's length. Keep it to business. Doesn't mean it's ugly. And it can be friendly and maybe you'll see them out in an event, but to go socialize with either a subordinate, if you will, or a board member, I would really refrain from that. I just, maybe that's old school thought, but it just seems to keep the lines crystal clear, because one thing, if you start to get a little bit too familiar with each other, then they could creep into the operational aspect of things. And so as a CEO, I think you got to keep remembering your responsibility is to lead that organization. And it is 24 hours a day. I mean, you can't turn it on and turn it off, those types of relationships. So
that's old school. We must be the same age. Yes, I would completely agree with you. I think what happens is then it becomes more difficult for the board to hold the CEO accountable.
Yes.
And it becomes more difficult for the CEO to hold the board accountable.
Yeah. That's well said, right? Because it's how do you hold friends accountable? It's right. Challenging.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I think
yeah. that's, and then,
that's
and a then good you, you can develop biased views of what's being presented both ways. And again, I'm all for friendly, relationships, but I just am a little concerned about it going the other way, much like what you said.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the reasons you stated, I've seen it where friends have come on and now they take over the CEO position and they're friends with board members. And boy, there's not the accountability that's necessary to drive the organization forward. You've got to use that accountability to build trust in the community and people know it. I mean, they'll know if there's some softness, if you will, just some mm-hmm. easy aspect to things in those relationships. So, yeah.
Agreed.
So let me ask you this, Carrie, a final question. So this is a podcast for board members primarily. What advice do you have? And you've touched on this a little bit to board members so that they can be very, very effective.
Yeah. I mean, start with the easy stuff. I've gone to a million board meetings where no one has read the materials. You know, and if you're on other boards or you're out in the community, don't be afraid to engage on issues so you become better informed about what's going on in the community. If you're on, a women's mentoring board, that doesn't mean the conversation has to be about women's mentoring. Just knowing what's going on in a community at a broader level can be very helpful to the board as an organism and as advice to the CEO. Make time for your CEO. I know a lot of people are busy, but I think those one or twice a year touch bases that are one-on-one are really important. Be respectful of your other board members. You will not always agree. However, if you listen, there may be a viewpoint that you can get something out of, that you will learn something from, and at the end of the day, you have to respect. If you're going to continue to operate effectively together. And enjoy it. Enjoy it, right? You have to be engaged. In some instances, you have to be active, but don't overthink your level of activity. Show up and be present.
And then you'll experience the joy that serving on a nonprofit board can certainly bring.
Exactly. Enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I like that. So, Carrie, how can people get in touch with you? You out there that you're back in the consulting business a little bit. If people want to reach out to you, how can they reach you?
Well, they can reach me by phone or by email, and I can give you that to post with the show notes, or I can give it to you now.
Give us the email now, and we'll do both.
Okay, terrific. It's Carrie A. Diaz, K-E-R-R-Y-A, as in apple, D-I-A-Z, @gmail.com. And my phone is 561-307-0844.
Very good. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to reach out to Carrie, please go ahead and do so. She's highly respected in the nonprofit consulting community. We got mutual friends and just think the world of her. And Carrie, thank you so much for today, for sharing your wisdom. And I think we're better off because of it. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to work with you as well as with Reed. Have a great day.
Great interview with Carrie Diaz. Now, this segment of Recapping with Reed. Reed, what were your observations?
So my first observation, Carrie reemphasized for us the importance of having the trust of your stakeholders as the CEO. She said there's almost nothing you can't do if you have the trust of your board and your staff.
Yeah, trust is the CEO's currency. And number two,
you are allowed to spend time teaching the board members how they can be better board members. And that's something that we often get engaged in when we are doing board retreats as well.
That's true. And number three,
the insightful comment that the relationship with the CEO and board chair actually might be the second most important relationship in the organization after the CEO and staff relationship.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting the way she framed that. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, recapping with Reed, who was analyzing our interview with Carrie Diaz. And we will I-501 see you next week.